Bury Football Club passed on from the EFL at 11:07 p.m. on Tuesday, the 27th of August 2019. Surrounded by loved ones and members of its family at its Gig Lane home, the 134-year-old institution was kicked out of the Football League, where it has resided for more than 120 years, after months and years of willful neglect and mismanagement by those who were supposed to act as custodians and guardians of a famous and valued community institution. Bury FC leaves behind thousands of supporters, all searching for an explanation as to why their beloved club was allowed to disintegrate in front of their eyes, despite their best efforts. Tuesday was a black day for English football and its supporters. Whoever your team is, we all share Bury's pain, and we should all hold to account those responsible for allowing this to happen. Expulsion doesn't yet mean liquidation, but it's almost impossible to see any other outcome. This is the Totally Football League show, reflecting on the day the EFL lost its totality and 72 became 71. Hello, listener. We're glad to have your company, although the mood is somber here today. I'm Matt Davis-Adams. I've got Sam Parkin, Adrian Clark and Joe Crilly with me. We will, of course, discuss all the latest goings-on from across the EFL in today's show, but clearly there's only one place we can start. Bury FC expelled from the EFL after their proposed takeover collapsed. It's the first time this has happened to a Football League club since Maidstone in 1992. In terms of what it means for League One, the EFL has done what it does best, namely release a statement.
League One will now comprise of 23 clubs for the remainder of the campaign, and relegation places in the division reduced to 3, which will result in a full complement of 24 clubs in 2020-2021. A discussion will take place with EFL clubs on the consequential impact on League Two when clubs next meet in September 2019.
Clearly, Bury's demise has happened gradually over a period of years, but how did it all unravel for the Shakers over the last few days? Let's take you back. It's Friday night, minutes before the midnight deadline. Bury were given a lifeline.
The owner, Steve Dale, says he's agreed a deal to sell.
Statement time again.
The EFL has this evening received notification that Steve Dale has accepted an offer from C&N Sporting Risk for the sale of Bury FC.
Suddenly there was hope. Were C&N Sporting Risk the solution, the saviour? Fast forward to Tuesday, the deadline for Bury and Bolton to prove to the EFL that they're financially sustainable is 5 p.m.
Don't tell me it's over, this club's a lifetime friend. Don't tell me it's over, I'm buried till the end.
Fans are cleaning up Gig Lane tickets and the programme are being printed for Saturday's match against Doncaster. There's optimism that the club will continue. But at 3:40 p.m, news comes through that C&N Sporting Risk, the potential buyers of Bury, were unable to proceed with the takeover following a period of due diligence. Meanwhile, Sky Sports, with all the sensibility of Donald Trump at a feminism convention, put a countdown timer on the screen because garishness equals ratings. 4:20 p.m, Bury released a statement reminding fans not to trespass on club grounds. It seemed the jig was up, and at 5 p.m, the deadline passed. It wasn't until 11:07 p.m. that the news was confirmed.
Having considered all available options, including a number of late expressions of interest provided to the EFL, the EFL board has unanimously determined, with enormous regret, that Bury's membership be withdrawn.
Meanwhile, Bolton were plummeting towards their own crisis, as on Saturday night it seemed their number was up too. They've since been given 14 days to avoid the same fate as Bury. Adrian, the immediate reaction when you heard the news about Bury?
Just desperately sad, wasn't it? It was awful. You hate to see it. We have seen it in the past, a long, long time since Maidstone were liquidated, I think back in 1992. I remember it. It's amazing, I guess, that no other club has fallen in the same manner until yesterday. But no, you just feel incredibly sad for the people involved in the club, the people that work there that have lost their jobs, the fans who now won't know what to do for the rest of the season. Hopefully there'll be a Phoenix club, but yeah, it's awful news. And I think there are a lot of people to blame for this. It's not just the EFL, it's not just Steve Dale, it's not just the previous owner. I think a culmination of mismanagement and neglect has led to this awful news.
Sam, I don't know about you, but I feel like I was a bit complacent about it. Every week we've been talking about it and you just kind of assume, well, it'll get sorted in the end. Somebody will come in.
Yeah, completely agree. Didn't think it would get to this level. Can only echo what Adrian said. The people at the ground, the staff, the players, the younger players who were maybe established at Bury, 18, 19-year-olds. That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to walk into another professional club. Far from it. The experienced boys like Neil Danz, Stephen Dawson, who's obviously we've heard from in the last week or so, that might be the last league football that they've played. But more than anything, the supporters. I think football clubs can be used as escapism from trauma in everyday life. It brings people in those type of communities together. At 5 years old, my dad took me to QPR. I went to every home game. I cried when they lost. I walked to school with my head held high when they won. It was the biggest thing in my life. So it's really sad to think about those young kids and the older supporters who've been going for 50 years, of course, but the young people who support their local club. Hopefully there'll be a Phoenix club, like Adrian says, but it's really not a nice thing to think about if they're going to have to go and support someone else. It's not what we do in football.
Gavin has asked us via At The Totally Show, what does expelled by the EFL exactly mean? They got kicked out of League One, but can't they just start again with non-league football and play their way back into the EFL if they get their finances back on track and everything? The problem is, Adrian, getting their finances back on track is the big issue that they've dealt with. And we're talking millions of pounds that they need to come up with that you're not going to regenerate in revenue by starting again at the bottom of the football pyramid.
No, it's incredibly complicated. I'll leave people that are better versed in that side of things to explain more. But no, I think you probably do have to literally start again. We have seen it with clubs like Wimbledon and Newport and others that have come back just as strong almost. So, but it's a long process, and I don't think that that's much consolation for Bury supporters now, especially those. It is actually the children that I feel really sorry for here, because they're the ones that really look forward to going with their parents potentially every weekend to go and watch their team, and they're not going to have that, not for at least a season. But I'm confident, given what's happened to other clubs in this situation in the past, Chester City as well were one another, weren't they, that you can start again. Even if it is down the non-league pyramid, the journey back will be a long one, but hopefully a successful one. But right now, it's just really depressing.
Lots of people calling for the Premier League to have done more. To clarify, it's against the rules to give other clubs money. But as Henry Winter points out in the Times, the elite clubs could do more in terms of playing more friendlies in pre-season at local EFL clubs, providing huge windfalls for the likes of Bury. It's something, Sam, that they do in the Bundesliga quite a lot. The big teams there, if there's teams in lower leagues in financial trouble, Bayern Munich will go and play a game there and send their first team. That seemed like quite an easy fix.
Yeah, but I think it does go on. I think I'm right in saying someone played at Dagenham last season, either West Ham or Crystal Palace, when they needed a little bit of support. So I think it does happen. The most startling facts and figures, statistics that I saw yesterday was actually on the debate last night about the amount of revenue at clubs across all three EFL divisions that goes on wages. It was astonishing. 2017-18, 106% of the revenue at Championship clubs went on the wages. I mean, you know, if that's not going to set alarm bells ringing, I don't know what it is. So it's been spiralling out of control for a number of years, and obviously it's reached the teams in the lowest tier in the EFL, because the rewards are so great if you can get to the promised land, and these owners want to come in and be successful and spend what they haven't got.
Yeah, I think that's what the previous owner, Stuart Day, had done, wasn't it? He'd basically wanted to pump a load of money in, but didn't have it. So then he took money out of his property companies, and then he was allowed to convert that into shares, which then came back to bite him when his companies that he borrowed the money for the wages went bust. So therefore the money was no longer there to pay the salary. So that can't be allowed. And I think that is where the EFL have let themselves down here. They've basically buried their heads in the sand, thought, as long as these salaries are being paid, we kind of almost don't mind how it's happening. There needs to be much more stringent controls on salaries. And if that means lowering the wages of lower league footballers, so be it, because we'd rather have clubs than have players that are earning money that their employers can't afford to pay them. And that's been a big issue here.
Right, for more on this, we're going to speak to Rob Harris from the Associated Press. He joins us now to tell us what happens next. Okay, Rob, well, this has been coming with Bury, but I guess many of us hope that it wouldn't happen. How did things get this bad?
I mean, it seems a succession of mismanagement and bad decision-making and questions around the EFL in terms of accepting new owners and how much they actually managed to and did or did not scrutinise them and assess the long-term business plans. I mean, on the more immediate front, how did it happen this week? And I think questions will linger about, could Bury have been given more time to find a rescue package?
Stevens tweeted us to ask, what did the owners before Steve Dale do to the club, and how can a man who has no interest in football in Dale get to own one? It doesn't seem to make much sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing where Steve Dale bought the club for £1 last year, which some say raises questions in itself, the fact that there was this heavy debt attached to the club. And what we hear then in recent weeks is he says he didn't even realise there was a football club in Bury before he took control of it, which then raises questions. Actually, although sometimes the EFL doesn't have maybe a bountiful number of potential owners of a club, do they need to be start to have some sort of test, as it were, to actually just assess, do they know the area? Do they really know it? Do they really feel for the area? Do they know the club and the team they're buying into? Just to quiz them in terms of their actual rightness as owners, and rather than just, are they disqualified as directors? Do they meet those narrow requirements? Because we're also obviously understanding the fact that Steve Dale didn't need to offer a long-term commitment. He could actually even fund the club going forward into more than, you know, a season. And that's obviously left it in this unsustainable position, and, you know, ultimately sort of weighed down by the debts and the remortgaging of the stadium.
How much blame do you put onto the EFL for this? Is it kind of 50-50 between them and the owners?
Yeah, I mean, the EFL are sort of now suggesting there are things to be learnt from it, calling it their darkest day. I mean, I think they need to be heavily scrutinised over the process, point by point, over they accepted Steve Dale as the owner, and also just what were these offers that were coming in. I mean, if you look back over the last weekend, the fact that they said they were in exclusive talks with CNN Capital Sporting Risk, which meant they were talking to no other party, then the moment that collapsed, it meant, you know, there was no seemingly other viable option to get a takeover completed before the 5 o'clock deadline. Given the parlous state of things and how it can't have been a surprise to them about some of the debts attached to the club, the question is whether this should actually be engaged with as many parties as possible rather than focusing on the one exclusive party. And then ultimately it comes back to who they're approving as owners and how rigorously they are assessing, you know, their suitability. And then beyond that is the various sustainability matters around the clubs that have waste of revenue ratios that are so high.
Rob, have you got any idea what this will mean for the current staff, the current playing staff? Will they continue to be paid a portion through the CBA, or is that for them? Will they be having to look for new employers straight away?
Well, the business still exists. It's not been liquidated. So obviously there's a process in terms of recovering any finances that are owed. The PFA have stepped in to try to help, but it is a human story at the heart of it. The fact that you have these players who and coaches who are effectively without employment, in the sense of the, you know, there's no prospect of immediately playing, and what do they do in terms of so many players trying to search for new clubs, and you know, we've heard about their personal situations in terms of having mortgages to pay, and perhaps given often at the top end of the game, we have this distance between the players and the fans, we can forget, particularly lower down, the fact, you know, it's not awash with money in terms of wages. And then beyond that, obviously, we have the impact on the local business in the community as well.
Oh, it's absolutely awful. Do you think it might come to a point where the government has to step in and oversee and make sure that the operations of football clubs, which are institutions in local communities, just to make sure that the operations are being done properly? We see in business, particularly in the financial industry, auditors constantly working with companies to make sure that they're doing things correctly. Can the EFL work with the government to set up an independent body moving forwards that just regulates and checks that everything is being done to avoid something like this happening again?
Yeah, and the Premier League talked after the Portsmouth administration of their powers subsequently to be able to sort of step into clubs to the sign of danger. And you see it as well on the international side of things with FIFA. They will put something called a normalisation committee into a country to effectively take over the running. You've got UEFA doing it now in Ireland with the FIA, given all their problems. And a bigger picture, you've got FIFA who've gone and basically taken over the whole of African football to run it at the moment at CAF. So, you know, we see examples from across the game where there should be an ability for a governing body just to effectively step in. And there are enough signs looming, you know, in recent months. And yet, obviously, Steve Dale was the man they still had to deal with. And many, you know, questioning his, you know, upworthiness in all this.
Rob Harris there from the AP. And meanwhile, less than half an hour down the M61 from Gig Lane, Bolton Wanderers have been given 14 days to prove to the EFL that they have the funds to complete the season or to find a buyer, or they too will be expelled. Joe, you're supposed to be our betting expert, but really you're our Bolton expert. You retweeted this stark reminder on how Bolton was run by Ken Anderson. Anderson was the 12th highest paid director in English football during his time at Bolton. He paid himself £525,000 and his son £125,000 for consultancy services, while staff went unpaid and food banks were used. Yeah, the fit and proper person's test, not really worth its name.
No, not fit for purpose. The club has been on a slide since leaving the Premier League. Ken Anderson came in and it was, I think we all watched the debate last night, and a phrase that was used on there was, it was just like putting a sticking plaster over a stab wound. It was a stay of execution, basically. And that's what Bolton Wanderers now have again, 14 days. They avoided being expelled from the league yesterday, as Bury unfortunately didn't. But I have no confidence that anything will come of it. The 14-day period doesn't give Bolton Wanderers another 14 days because the club could be placed into liquidation at any point. There is no money. The well has run dry at Bolton Wanderers, and if a deal isn't done sooner rather than later, we can't wait. We can't afford to wait the 14 days. If a deal isn't done sooner rather than later, then Bolton will cease to exist, and talk of AFC Bolton Wanderers as well as AFC Bury will be very much at the forefront of everybody's minds.
So what happened with this Football Ventures takeover? You mentioned about the hotel being a sticking point last week. Was that what proved to kill the deal?
Yeah, and they're still there, apparently. They're still working on making a deal happen. I think, as you said with Bury, they had one party and that was it. The administrators have identified Football Ventures as the consortium to take Bolton Wanderers forward, and they have focused all of their attentions on this deal. And so now that we are approaching hurdles as deadlines loom, it's becoming more and more difficult to see a way over the line because we are focusing only on them. Apparently, if these signatures get done, the deal will be done and Bolton Wanderers will be under the control of Football Ventures.
Is it too late to consider a fan ownership model for Bolton? Because we saw it with bigger clubs. Obviously, Bury is a smaller club than Bolton. We've seen it with Portsmouth. It's worked pretty well for them thus far. Has there been no talk of that?
Back when Ken Anderson took over the club, the Bolton Wanderers Supporters Trust was also set up with a view to perhaps taking over the club. What happened then is Eddie Davis wrote off the immense debt that had been built up by the club during the Premier League years, and more importantly, the Football League years, the Championship years, when we had players like Keith Andrews on £40,000 a week in the Championship. So the debt was written off by Eddie Davis, but in the interim period, the 3 years since, Ken Anderson has racked up even more debt. So the Bolton Wanderers Supporters Trust going in to a relatively debt-free club would have been viable. I think a supporters trust going into a club that's been run into the ground and has debts again amounting up to £20-25 million now, I think would have been or will be a step too far. I think I have a lot of good things to say about fan ownership, having been a Chester fan as well, a Chester City fan, and now currently a Chester fan. But that is in the future. If the club ceases to exist, if you're starting from a level point, day dot, you get the board, you sort the board up, you build the club up from the ground upwards, and it can be done and teams can be successful with that in mind. So maybe that is certainly what I would look at Bury doing and what I would hope that they would do to get themselves back. And it would certainly be something that I would get myself involved in were the same thing to happen to Bolton Wanderers.
Man, that was all pretty depressing. We'll have more on League One later, but we're going to spend some time looking at the rest of the news from the EFL.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill.
Headlines from Tuesday's second round League Cup action are as follows. Crawley creep past Norwich. Colchester put out Palace on pens. The two-time European champions obliterate the no-time European champions on Trent side. And Nathan Jones breathes a huge sigh of relief as Stoke beat Leeds after a shootout thanks to none other than Jack Butland. More games tonight, Wednesday, when the draw for round three will be made. Just briefly on that, Adrian, Crawley the standout result there. It's tight between them and Colchester, really.
Yeah, I think they're both excellent, obviously. Colchester probably beat a stronger side. Crystal Palace put out a lot of big guns. So that is an incredible performance from Colchester United, who have been pretty tight at the back. They've got a defender out at the moment. I know Harry Pell's not playing. So that's a really strong performance from them. So congratulations. As for Crawley, it's Bez Labala. I mean, this kid is... We didn't know a lot about him, did we? From Birmingham, he'd had some fleeting substitute appearances for the Blues. But he's come in and hit the ground running at Crawley. Again, he's the hero. And yeah, that's a wonderful, wonderful scoreline. Because it's you can look at team sheets and say, oh, look, they didn't beat the first team. But these reserves at the Premier League sides, they're very strong. And the quality of the individual players is exceptionally high. So those are two terrific results.
And the quality of their pen, Sam Colchester, yeah. They scored all five of them.
Yeah, Sky have come in for a bit of grief after yesterday's proceedings, but the soccer special show last night was brilliant, actually, when all those games were coming to an end. I think there was four penalty shootouts going on at the same time. And yeah, Luke Norris and Nublay and players like that, you know, good quality players in the lower levels, but there's pressure. And it's a big night for those lads. I played in those games, you know, first couple of rounds of the League Cup against Premier League opposition. You're desperate to try and win. And yes, even your manager will rotate the squad to a degree, but you're still desperate to get one over a big cheese. So, no, brilliant. And the lad at Crawley, Gary Rowett, spoke really nicely about him on the Quest show a few weeks ago. I had him as a kid at Birmingham and said that he was one that he anticipated going to a lower league club and maybe getting back to championship level. So we'll have to keep an eye on him.
Good on him. They'll be awaiting the draw with interest, as we all will. To the championship then. And in the championship, this is what's happened since last we met. Swansea having their best start to a league season since 1978, finding themselves second in the table to Leeds by a mere goal difference of one. This weekend we'll surely sort that out. More on that momentarily. Meanwhile, Huddersfield still don't have a manager and have yet to win a match. And Forest play football. Really good football. Total, every player touches the ball before the goal football. Promotion winning, we're going to be Premier League again football. I've got a bit carried away. Standout match from this weekend, Stoke 0, Leeds 3. Days before they met in the Cup, Stoke and Leeds faced off in the Potteries. League points definitely the priority over Cup success for these two, and it was Leeds who cruised to all three of them.
Hernandez, lovely ball. If Dallas can get there, he will get there! Oh, that was wonderful! Absolutely wonderful! It's dangerous, it's 2-0! Gianni Alioski! Puts Leeds United firmly in the driving seat. And the way this is going, you'd not bet against Leeds getting more goals. Hernandez picking out a glorious pass again. Alioski, the angle tight. Federici with the save. Bamford! Curtains for Stoke. And that wraps it up.
We'll give them their due shortly. But as for Stoke, ever since Caroline put the curse on them last season, they've stunk out the championship. Nathan Jones has already gone nuclear in digging out his players in public. Clark, is it too dramatic to say that that shootout win on Tuesday saved his job?
I wouldn't have liked to have thought that it was all based on a Carabao Cup game. I think maybe the weekend fixture may be defining for Nathan. They've got to hold their nerve here, I think, Stoke City. They've employed a head coach with a proven track record, someone that said he would change the culture, and he's only had 27 league games, I think, to change that culture. It's not really long enough. I guess, you know, the issue is he's won very few, just four of those 27 games, and ultimately managers are judged on that. So, no, Yeah, he is under pressure for his job, no doubt about it. But the players are letting him down with individual errors, aren't they? What I will say is that Leeds at the weekend, they're good enough to open up anyone in the Championship with their sharpness, their speed of movement, their quality. So I think he deserves another couple of games to try and get the structure of that side right. It is defensively at the moment that they're all over the gaff, which is strange because at the end of last season, it was completely the opposite. He tightened them up. Almost every time they played, Stoke City were goalless. They're involved in so many goalless draws at the moment. He would kill for a goalless draw, wouldn't he, Nathan Jones? It's the defensive side of their play has been woeful.
And that starts, Sam, with Jack Butland, who scored his penalty last night. He also made a mistake in the League Cup tie, but was dropped for this match. And I kind of feel like he's symptomatic of what has gone wrong with Stoke, in that as a club and some of their players just seem unable to adjust to the fact that they are in the Championship now and not the Premier League.
Yeah, and Nathan Jones has been open that there was some of the players didn't want to be there, didn't want to be playing in the Championship, and I think that was the case under Gary Rowett as well. So the players have to take some of the responsibility. We've seen the likes of Berahino and Afobe move on, but there still seems to be some members of that squad that don't want to be at the football club. I think he was in a really tricky position because I was critical of the diamond at Charlton, certainly defensively in the setup. So he did change, tinkered with the system for that game against Leeds, but he had success doing that last year in the corresponding fixture. So I can understand why he did it, but maybe I'm going to be a little bit contradictory going back on what I said a few weeks ago. I think he's got a way of playing, Nathan Jones, and I think if he coaches the players should be good enough to adapt. And I thought there was enough signs in that performance at Charlton and at Derby for him to persist. I know it's really tricky and you can credit him for changing and trying to do something different, or you can applaud him for sticking with the diamond. It's very difficult, but I still believe that he'll get it right, and I think it would be absolutely criminal for them to even contemplate changing at the moment. I think it would be a disaster. We've seen what it was like under Mark Hughes. We saw that Gary Rowett couldn't get a tune out of those players. He needs to be given a little bit more time.
As for Leeds, Clark, he only dropped 2 points all season, and that was against Forest, so no shame in that. What, if anything, makes you think that this season will have a happier end than
last? I'm not still entirely convinced there'll be a happy ending. I look at the bench the other day, and it, outside of the guys that he brought on, you're looking at young, sort of unproven players that a lot of Leeds United fans wouldn't know. Obviously, Nketiah's on the bench at the moment, and Helder Costa and Shackleton, the other guys, I don't really know the names. So I still feel as if they're a little bit light in terms of the numbers. But you can't argue with the quality of the football. It's absolutely breathtaking at times. They just look really fit, really sharp. The triangles are fantastic. The new system is great, isn't it, with Phillips in between the two centre-halves. I still think, and we'll probably get to the looking ahead to the game with Swansea, I still think against sides that have got a bit about them, that can look after the ball themselves for long periods and not allow Leeds to dictate, I think that they can stretch Leeds in those wide areas, because when you've got these back three, particularly containing centre-halves that aren't natural full-backs, if you've got good wingers that can get into those channels down the sides, I think you can still hurt Leeds United. So I'm saying don't get too carried away, but so far they've been brilliant.
Sam, I wanted to ask you about Patrick Bamford, because I see him as a bit of a kindred spirit with you, kind of nomadic career up until this point. He's only 25, including loans, Leeds, the ninth different club that he's played for. Obviously, he had problems with injury last season, but does it feel like he's finally found a home, 4 in 5 at the start of the season for him?
Yes. You only have to look at the opening day performance at Bristol City, where, like probably a lot of people, I watch him very closely because of the scrutiny he's been under. I thought his all-round game was exceptional. Not just getting into goal-scoring positions, but getting them up the pitch, running into channels and using his physique to do the ugly side of the game, win throw-ins and win free kicks and give the defenders a bit of respite. And he's taken his chances as well this season. I think it was a fantastic finish the other day in a different setup, as Adrian spoke about, with Harrison playing off him the other day. So I think they've got a very clever manager, and within that, you need someone to get you that return of goals. I think he could be the man, especially now you've got Nketiah's obviously hot on his heels now, pushing him.
That makes a difference, though. I mean, you must have been there in your career where you were the first choice and then they sign someone in your position, gives you that little jolt. I suppose it can affect players in different ways, can't it? You can maybe get nervous at the prospect of losing your place, or it can inspire you. It seems to have had that effect on him.
Yeah, I think when things were going well for me in my career, even on the training ground, when you got someone in, even if it was for a month's loan, 3 months loan, I wanted to show them that I was the top dog in training, let alone the matches. So, yeah, you need that healthy
it's
edge
better
in every
for
squad.
You. As a footballer, it's better. Even though sometimes you might not feel that way, oh, no, he's signed someone in my position. It's actually for your own good.
Definitely.
Because you need people. You need to be pushed all the time in football. And I don't think last year, once Roof was out, he was really had too much competition.
Well, Leeds got a tough run of games coming up. Swansea at home at the weekend. Then a derby at Barnsley. A repeat of the playoff semi against Derby at Elland Road. A trip to Charlton. Then West Brom at home. Yikes. And for the visuals of what we've been talking about, then it's nice and simple. All you need is the EFL on Quest, and here's where you can find it. Freeview Channel 12, Freesat 167, Sky 144, Virgin 217, or online at questod.co.uk, and would particularly recommend the on-demand option, which fits into your working and footballing week nicely. Looking ahead to the weekend, then, we mentioned Leeds against Swansea there. Let's look at it from a Swans perspective. Flapping their palmates wildly under the water whilst appearing serene on the surface, threatening to break a man's arm, trying not to get eaten by the Queen, etc. Steve Cooper's had a brilliant start. Like Leeds, they've only dropped a point. Given that he made his name as a youth coach, Sam, with Liverpool and England, it's interesting that he's got a tune out of two of Swansea's more experienced misfits in Borja Baston and Andre Ayew. So he's kind of showing that adaptability that, you know, he can work with players of various experience levels.
Definitely best start for 41 years. And I think when you just look at it pre-season, losing Potter, who we were so impressed with last season, and James and McBurney, I mean, you wouldn't have had them in the reckoning at all. So a credit to what he's done. It's a pretty set system, the 4-2-3-1 that they play. Selina seems to be getting that consistency in his game. Old teammate of mine, Matt Grimes, is very much the orchestrator. A lot of their play, he'll be the one that will drop deep and get on the ball and encourage them to play the old Swansea way. So, no, it's taken everyone by surprise, and no one more so in that 11 than Baston, who, of course, has been on loan the last couple of years, and he seems to be a really good focal point for him.
Yeah, could he be their Pookie, I wonder? Stranger things have happened. I did say on the show at the end of last season, when I saw Swansea in the flesh, I saw a bit of Norwich in them, in terms of they're so comfortable in the style of play. And I don't think Cooper's really changed the style of play too much. So they got a lovely blend of sort of hungry young players with a little bit of experience sprinkled in there. You know, the back is a good example. Van der Hoorn, strong guy, experience, alongside him, Rodon, who's come in, and they've formed a cracking partnership. You've got Roberts at fullback as well, that's a player with loads of potential. So I didn't think they'd do a Norwich because they'd lost their best players and their manager, but I get that feeling that they're capable of sticking around. I think I said it on last week's show that I like what I see from Swansea City. And I give them a chance, actually, in this game, because they've got quality in the wide areas. And that's where Leeds are weak, if you can get at them, because Alioski and Dallas are very offensive players, aren't they? You want to drag those centre-halves out wide, whip balls into the box, and that's where I think, you know, Ayew and Baston could profit. So I give Swansea a chance. Not saying they're going to go there and win, but I give them a chance.
Interesting. The ownership there has come in for a lot of stick, much of it justified over the last few years, but whoever picks the head coaches is doing a pretty decent job by and large. Now, if you've listened to this podcast before, you might be aware that I support Nottingham Forest. If you think I beat you over the head with that when we're not winning, can you imagine how insufferable I'm about to be? I'll try and compose myself, but my boy's certainly worth a mention this week because they've had a great 7 days. Sam and I were at the Valley last Wednesday to see them dominate for 5 minutes in the second half. They followed that up with a win at Fulham, enjoying a whopping 23% possession, most of which came while scoring the greatest goal the division has ever seen.
Jenkinson down the line to Lolly. Lolly plays a first-time 1-2 with Sal, wriggles away from a couple of challenges, then plays a 1-2 with Silva, and then a lovely ball out to the left-hand side for Robinson to drive over the cross, and Lewis Graben tucks in at the back post.
Colin Frey and Steve Hodge of BBC Radio Nottingham there. Mr. Frey, very much my mentor as a commentator. Michael Dawson seems to be doing something similar on the pitch with Joe Worrell. Sam, mentors in football is a thing, right? You had one at Swindon.
Yeah, unknown to me at the time, really, but I think Tommy Mooney was essentially brought into the club to be a little bit of a mentor towards me. And we had a really fruitful partnership that season. we didn't always get on, I would say, because I probably had that, like we've just been talking about, that hunger to be the top goal scorer and the top man. But I learned a hell of a lot from him. I learned the dark arts from him probably, and how to essentially play as a number nine in the lower divisions, you know, more the little bits of movement that I've just been talking about, Bamford, how to get the team up the pitch, how to win free kicks and stuff like that, stuff that I was probably a little bit naive to, being a lad out of Chelsea and wanting to get the ball to feet and link the play and drop a shoulder. Tommy was fantastic for me. And later on, I had Paul Furlong as well, Paul Pesce-Salido. Even though I was a little bit more senior by then, coming towards the end of my 20s, I was really fortunate to play with some brilliant guys. And Furlong is someone that I probably learned a lot from, and the way to conduct myself around the younger players in terms of the advice that I gave them when I was coming towards the end.
Yeah, I think it's all about having the right character to be the mentor, because some footballers, and a lot of strikers, are quite selfish, aren't they? And they'd only be really interested in themselves even if they were getting towards the end of their careers. If you've got the right character, they can be a godsend for someone coming through. Centre-halves, I think there's been a long, long tradition of centre-half partnerships being built on the old guy and the young fledgling. I'll look after you, son, because it's in everyone's interest for it to click, isn't it? And I definitely see that with Dawson and Worrell there. I cast my mind back to Arsenal. Adams, when he came through, he had David O'Leary. A little bit later on, Kolo Touré was so green when he first got to Arsenal. He had Sol Campbell to look after him. It's a thing, definitely. And I like Worrell. I think that loan spell at Rangers did him good, and he's had a terrific start to the season. There's a lot to like about Forest at the moment. These new signings, you have to say, a lot of them are looking mustard, aren't they? Semedo, I think has been great. Adoma, I don't think you can go wrong. I think that was a good pick-up from Forest. So no, fair play. We all thought Sabri Lamouchi, like, what's that all about? But so far, so good.
Yeah, 8 changes for Forest against Derby last night. 10 from Derby. Does that then mean that Forest have got some strength and depth about them this season, which they haven't
had? 2 training grounds, haven't they? They should do.
Have they?
Half of them are getting changed over the road, aren't they? In a different building.
Yeah, the players who are not involved with the first team because he inherited a massively bloated squad. Yeah, that is true. But yeah, stop it, Sam.
I'm only winding you up, mate.
So Forest are hosting Preston this weekend. Preston, who beat Hull on penalties in the cup last night. They're pretty good at home. They're not so great away. Full disclosure, I am absolutely terrified of Alex Neil. I feel like if we ever met, he'd misconstrue something I said and just rip me to shreds immediately.
You should have tried playing against him. He was very tough, tackling Glaswegian in the middle of the park.
Who was the scariest manager that you played for?
I can't think of anyone who used to scare me.
Scary managers aren't always scary. Like, behind the scenes, you've got to have charm. You can't have a character, any kind of personality in the workplace, wherever you are. If someone is just scary all the time, they're not going to get the desired results, are they? So there'll definitely be a softer side. I'm sure he gets on very well with the lads, but it's knowing that you can't take liberties with a guy like Alex Neil. And I think that extracts a lot out of the team. What I like about Preston is their long-term vision. I think what they've been busy doing since he took over is recruiting young, hungry players that are probably not at their peak, but now it feels like they're all coming to fruition together, if you know what I mean. Like, they're 23, 24, 25, they've got their championship experience now, and I think they're ready to compete in the top half of the division. They're still young. They still need to be a bit tougher, a bit more robust on the road. But yeah, they're a team on the up, I think, Preston. That said, I would back Forest to beat them.
Joe, let's get some odds on the games we've been talking about. Clarkie fancy Swansea maybe to get something at Leeds. What would you give me on them winning at Elland Road?
They're quite a long price, 9-2 to get the win. Leeds odds on at 1-2 and the draw 16-5.
And how about the world's greatest football team against Preston?
Nottingham Forest, just a shade above evens to win this one, 6-5. Preston 5-2, a little shorter than I would have thought. And the draw 11-5.
Last year we were tipping Stoke for promotion. We're particularly flaky. What can you give me on them getting relegated?
They're still quite a big price, Stoke, to get relegated, but a hell of a lot shorter than they've ever been before. 5-1, which puts them at the same price as Reading, and it makes them joint 10th favourites.
So that's the Championship reviewed and previewed. What say we do something similar for League One in a jiffy?
Listeners, club statement time. Only joking. But I am here to inform you about our new website, thetotallyfootballshow.com. It's very good and is the place to go for the best of the podcasts, as well as some fine original features. For example, this week, Nick Miller explains why you shouldn't be surprised if Watford sack Xavi Gracia after only three games. Our EFL column warns everyone that what happened at Bury could happen to your club. Plus, we have the first interview with Lee Catamol since he signed for VVV Venlo in the Netherlands, and it's VVV good too. That's the totallyfootballshow.com. Go there today.
League One headlines that aren't related to the total mismanagement of football clubs on every conceivable level by all associated parties. Six teams remain unbeaten and five on 11 points after five matches, with Ipswich topping the table thanks to their five against Bolton's boys. Symmetrically, there are six teams without a win yet, although that includes Bury. Southend are one of those teams who, despite being 3-1 up, couldn't win against Wickham, prompting Wanderers boss Gareth Ainsworth to say,
"Wickham Wanderers, come on.
Take that, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer." And James Norwood's tribute to the world's greatest wrestlers continues, prompting a wonderful exchange between the striker and The Rock on Twitter.
If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
You might know The Rock better as Dwayne Johnson. Me and Mr. Norwood know him as the trailblazing, eyebrow-raising, jabroni-beating, pie-eating, heart-stopping, elbow-dropping, people's champ, The Rock. Excuse me. In other Ipswich news, Harry Wright is their under-23 keeper these days. He's the son of former town custodian Richard. Harry is father to a one-month-old daughter, meaning Richard Wright is a grandfather. Good Lord, I feel old. Right, let's have a quick word on how good Abbey was at choosing matches last week. Wickham 4, Southend 3. Clarkie, we spoke about Kevin Bond and his struggles last week. When they were 3-1, did you think, excellent, it's all turning around?
No, don't be silly. No, it's... I've been in struggling teams. I was in a struggling team at Southend United, and that's the problem. Sometimes, even when you are winning, you're looking over your shoulder, you think you're so desperate for it, yet because confidence is brittle, you can't ever feel that secure. And I think that's what happened there. Wickham got themselves back to 3-2, and then just panic set in. And Wickham are a good side when momentum is with them. They've got a lot of resilience and character. But they're all over the place at the moment, Southend, even in the Carabao Cup. Lost 4-1 at home to MK Dons. Another four goals leaked. What are they doing? What are they doing on the training ground? I've played in teams that have had leaky defences, but once you've taken a hammering, you can almost guarantee that so much work will be done on the training ground that the next week, no matter what happens, that is not replicated. It doesn't appear to be the case there at the moment. It's a bit of a mess.
In terms of that Wickham game, Sam, is it almost more psychologically damaging for those Southend players to have lost in the way they did than, say, if they'd just been beaten 4-0?
Yeah, it probably is, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Given the circumstances, far too easy, the last couple of goals. And you spoke about the firepower that Wickham have got in their armoury, and we didn't even mention Cashgate, who came in and scored twice, I think, and was instrumental in everything they did. So Wickham are going to score goals going forward, but Southend will be so disappointed having got themselves in that position. Be a positive that they've started scoring, because I thought that was clearly one of the areas that we'd highlighted. We didn't need too much intelligence to point at the top of the pitch. And obviously, defensively, they've been all over the place. But to score three goals, some positives. But to lose in that fashion to MK Dons last night, after they were on the back of a 4-0 home defeat by Peterborough, it stacks up, doesn't it, the problems?
Yeah, the mood, it couldn't be lower right now. I think the end might be near for Kevin Bond. I don't like to say that, but it feels like a change is required.
If we have a look at a couple of the weekend's games, Blackpool versus Portsmouth is one that catches the eye. Phil Collins might be taking an interest in events at Bloomfield Road, because if Pompey lose, it might be a case of no jacket required. Is that a little bit harsh? They go into the weekend 16th. They got 4 points from four. Mm. They spent decent money on John Marquis, etc. It wasn't supposed to be like this.
Tale of two managers, really. Grayson, obviously, flavour of the month there, rightly so. I don't think they've had great tests yet. I think this is the first big test for Blackpool. They stopped Rochdale playing last time out, only got a 0-0, but they're getting a good reputation under Brian Barry Murphy of playing good stuff. So Blackpool were able to stop that, and they're missing Delfonso, who's been very important alongside Nangile and Kaikai. So he could be back in the reckoning for that one. And Kenny Jackett, lots of criticism about the substitutions against Coventry during that 3-3 when they were 3-1 up and Coventry were 10 men and then subsequently 9 men, I think he went a little bit defensive and kind of rested on his laurels when really not you want to necessarily go after more and more goals. But I think the supporters are getting a little bit tired with his somewhat negative setup.
Do you think that he's overloaded in the attacking areas of the pitch with talent and players and options?
Well,
at the back, it doesn't. I don't see a lot of defensive players, considering he's quite a cautious manager by nature, Kenny Jackett.
Yeah,
just feels like he's not got enough depth in defensive players.
Well, they lost their best defender, haven't they, Clark? And Watmore's been out as well. So I think Downing's been coming in for a little bit of criticism. But if you could get Watmore back to play alongside Burgess, that could solve that to a degree. But yeah, the midfield players, I suppose Close can do a little bit of everything. I think McCrory's come in from Rangers and he seems to be getting pretty good reviews. So I'd imagine he'll start. Marquis getting his first goal is big moving forward. But yeah, Kenny seems to be under pressure for different reasons to Kevin Bond, but something might have to give.
Yeah, well impressed by Blackpool. But I think you're absolutely right to identify their fixtures so far. That's why the start of the season can be a bit misleading. They've not had the toughest run of games, Blackpool. But I think Rochdale are okay this season. There's something about them, and by all accounts, they were super comfortable away at Rochdale, which in itself tells me that they're pretty solid. They've recruited a new left back to replace Boller, Callum McDonald, this week. Ben Hennigan's back as well to play centre half. He was there last year, so we know we've talked about the front players. They're sharp, they're lively. He's sorting out the defence. So yeah, I think they're going to be hard to beat in this game, and during the course of the season, Blackpool.
Yeah, it'd be a cracking atmosphere too. They've had crowds of more than 11 and 9,000 in their two home games so far. And we know that even though it's a really long trip, Pompey always travel in good numbers. Lincoln v Fleetwood is another game I want to talk about over at Sinsel Bank. That baffling air raid siren will be going off. Adrian, say something about Lincoln that doesn't involve linking their manager with another club.
Well, they've had two defeats on the spin. So, you know, sack Cowley, hey? Get rid of him. No. It's been, a wake-up call this week. They've played well, but lost a couple of tough games. So this has turned into a bit of a biggie for them. But we know that they're strong on home turf. They've got the Everton game, haven't they, tonight? So we don't know how they'll fare in that one. But no, I'm not worried about Lincoln. I think that they are going to be competitive. No massive negatives for me. I just think they've missed chances across the last couple of games. And that's the only issue to address.
We've already had a bit of BBC commentary, haven't we, today on the show?
I
quite like listening to the Lincoln coverage on BBC Lincolnshire, but they are so partisan. It's unbelievable. So it's incredible how biased they are.
Why do you listen to BBC Lincoln?
No, I just quite like listening to Cowley after the matches. Oh, okay. You know, when I'm researching for my jobs, you know, my paid jobs, Adrian.
Yeah, above and beyond.
And Cowley was... they're ridiculous. You should listen to it. They do a little podcast as well with the manager's interview. Anyway, he was very honest about the concern of potentially being nearly men this season. He doesn't want to be having that label, playing well and not getting the points that the performances deserve. So he spoke about that, but was also very honest about just missing athleticism in the centre of the park. So he might have to appease a few of his players who played at the weekend, but I think he's talking about Frecklington and Pett, who are the two out in the midfield. And Morrell's been playing in there from Bristol City, who just had his call up to Wales. But yeah, I think they're missing a couple of players, and the goal that led to Doncaster's victory was Payne trying to play out of his own 18-yard box. And we've been giving them loads of praise about playing slightly more football, not in your own 18-yard box, I would suggest, with the game on a knife edge. So that's something they need to... Never thought I'd say this. I'd have to discourage Lincoln from playing too much football.
As for Fleetwood, big win for them against Accrington last week after three without in League and Cup. Are they mid-table fodder again this season? Can they go any higher?
No, I think they can get a bit higher than that, actually. Yeah, I like the signings that Joey Barton made in the summer. He's got a lot of experience. I'd pick out Paul Coutts, Matt Jilks, Josh Morris. They'd probably be the pick, but there are others, of course. Brought Chad Evans back in, and they've got goal scorers. And I think if you've got goal scorers like Evans and Paddy Madden, and then behind them you've got that fight and organisation and structure, then you're going to be in the top half of the table. So no, I would anticipate Fleetwood knocking on the door for playoffs, just as they did for a lot of last year.
Joe, odds-wise, William Hill, League One, Lincoln versus Fleetwood. Are you thinking home victory?
Yeah, Lincoln are favourites. Odds against, surprisingly, 5-4 to win the match. Fleetwood 2-1, the draw 5-2.
How about Blackpool against Pompey?
Blackpool 2-1, Portsmouth 7-5. So Portsmouth favourites and the draw 23-10.
And what about Southend getting a win against a Rochdale side we like the look of?
Well, Southend are coming up to 2-1. They're 17-10 to get the win. Rochdale 6-4 favourites and the draw 12-5.
Right, League One checked. What say we meet in League Two momentarily?
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football League Show from Muddy Knees Media.
In League Two then, where anything can happen except goals for Stevenage. 5 games, no goals for Borough. I blame that Burger King sponsorship they have. I guess whenever they do find the net, it'll be a whopper.
Whee!
Exeter and Newport remain the only teams yet to lose in the fourth tier, with the latter enjoying 4 consecutive clean sheets since their 2-2 draw with Mansfield on opening day. And Paul Hurst's first win for Scunthorpe is yet to come, with their latest loss coming to Macclesfield, who are riding that new manager bounce nicely. In terms of Saturday's action, Walsall against Grimsby. Grimsby walloped Port Vale last week, and then they only played a half of football against Macclesfield before the heavens opened, and that game was abandoned at half-time in the Cup. Are there signs, though, Clarkie, that Michael Jolly is beginning to make his mark? It was a quite difficult season for him the last time round. Might be a bit better this time.
I think they're looking better, yeah. Yeah, they've got a bit, but it seemed like they've got more firepower. Obviously, it's easy to say that after just won 5-2 against Port Vale. But I think it was interesting that a load of his new signings scored. No, they've got a nice blend there, haven't they, up top? Hansen is a tried and trusted, isn't he? You know what you're going to get with him. Stick the ball in the box, he'll win his headers. Moses Ogbu, obviously powerful guy coming from Swedish football. No, I didn't fancy Grimsby to have a great season, but there's a little bit of dynamism about their play. They look great going forward at the moment. So, yeah, this is going to be a test for a Walsall team that are short of goals. There's a little bit of pressure beginning to build on Darryl Clark. So, I would back Grimsby to go to the best got and at least score one. Can Walsall, you know, get enough to win the game? Because they kind of need it.
Your old club, Sam, Walsall, it's not been a great start for the new boss.
No, it's not, but he's got a proven track record of sorting out clubs in this kind of state. Only the 2 goals they've scored. And when you look at the personnel they had last year, Clarkie's mate, Andy Cook, Ferrier, Ismail, and they've got Adebayo, who I saw. He was a young kid at Fulham, was at Swindon on loan last season. He's not going to be a regular goal scorer, in my mind. They've got another loanee from Bristol City, Rory Holden, and Caelan Lafferty, who did score a couple in the League Cup. So,
but he's not. I wouldn't put him down as a predator, Caelan Lafferty. I saw him years ago at Southend on loan, and he was a winger. So I don't think he's a natural to score the goals for them.
Yeah, and it's 270 minutes now they haven't scored for, so that's the clear problem. But you need to give Darryl Clark a bit of time. I think they're playing a 3-5-2 at the moment, and my understanding is the wing-backs aren't really contributing too much offensively, so I think that's a little bit of an issue in terms of creating chances as well. But no, I like Darryl Clark. It's a huge rebuild, and I would anticipate with everything that's gone on at Walsall off the pitch, I remember speaking about it at length last season, they'll be realistic enough to give them a little bit of time.
Scunthorpe versus Carlisle is the next game I want to have a look at. Sam, some teams have a really difficult time readjusting to life in a new division. In Scunthorpe's case, is that because they've got a new man in charge? Is it because they're used to losing games? Bit of both? Something else?
I think so. I think you can say that it's a portion of both of those things, definitely. I think it's hard to just switch it off when there's been players in that squad that have been used to losing every week. It's a new manager, new ideas. Again, the strikers is an issue. I know it seems quite simplistic, but Van Veen, Novak injured now. Carl Wootton coming in for loads of flack the other day. Just the one goal from a forward so far this season. So it's clear where they're struggling, and he's fallen out with Adam Hamill as well in the last few days, who obviously is the more of a supplier, and that looks like he's going to have to move on. So he ruffled a few feathers at Ipswich, didn't he? Paul Hurst. Let's not pretend that he didn't fall out with a few. And that seems to have happened again. I don't know what Hamill's attitude's been like around the place. It sounds like there's been a few misdemeanours, but yeah, all isn't great there. And it's a huge game against the Carlisle side where there's also been an enormous rebuild. So two managers with decent pedigrees, desperate, I think, to not have a season where they're battling relegation. And there's a player, Olamola, actually, who's on loan at Carlisle from Scunthorpe, who's actually been very good in front of goal. So I'm not entirely sure. Sorry, Adrian, on this. I should have listened to BBC Cumbria. I'm not sure if he could play at the weekend.
In terms of Carlisle, Adrian, their problem, maybe the opposite of Scunthorpe, they concede too many goals, two each in each of their last four league games. And they've kind of been inconsistent ever since Stephen Pressley's taken charge. Every time it looks like he's getting a bit of momentum, it goes.
Yeah, and you look at some of the chances they create and you think, there's a real team there. You know, you've got Hallam Hope. Nathan Thomas has started the season brilliantly down the right-hand side. He's been on fire. Some of the ammunition that he's put into the box. I'm not worried about them scoring goals. It's at the back. He's got experience, hasn't he, Presley? Obviously a former centre-half himself. He's got two older guys, Webster, Knight, Percival, I think, are the partnership there. And the obvious thing to say when you've got an older pairing is, do they lack a bit of pace, bit of mobility? And when you see some of the goals that they've shipped, you'd suggest so. So it's probably a good fixture for Carlisle United coming up against sort of goal-shy Scunthorpe. Big pressure on both managers. On Hurst, just wonder, don't you, how much that scarred him, that experience at Ipswich. I'm not saying he's lost his mojo, but it can happen, can't it, where you have a bad experience and it knocks you, and then you change and maybe try and do things, you know, maybe copy what other managers have done in the past, what's not really you. And I just worry about that. He needs to stay calm, as do his board at the moment.
Yeah, mojo not lost, but certainly misplaced. Worth a mention that as a result of everything that's happening with Bury, only one team from League Two will be relegated at the end of the season. Scunthorpe currently occupy that spot, but it's early days. Joe, have you got any odds on League Two relegation? That must affect things quite significantly.
Yeah, so every team has drifted. The prices, there's a bit more value knocking about now. But Morecambe are the favourites to go down. They're 3-1. Oldham 9-2. Macclesfield 9-2. Stevenage 4-1.
In terms of those games that we talked about on Saturday, Walsall versus Grimsby, away win, a potential there?
Well, you guys have talked up the away win, but we've priced it up as Walsall favourites, 5-4. Grimsby 23-10, and the draw 9-4.
And how about Scunthorpe, Carlisle?
Scunthorpe 27-20, Carlisle 2-1, the draw 23-10.
That's about it for this week. Sam, where are you in the wide, wide world of sport this weekend?
I am at Cardiff Fulham on Friday, then I'm on the telly Saturday.
Clarke, you'll be on the wireless at the weekend?
I'll be on the wireless for sure. Yeah, not going to go to a game this weekend, so I'll just watch it from afar.
Thanks as ever for your company, chaps, and you too, listener. Same time next week, it's a date.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.